But yeah, it was amazing to me how much more interesting it was because the stakes were so high. The game pace wasn't increased at all. In fact, there's a 15-minute rain delay in the middle of it. But because the stakes of the game were so high, like the delays in between didn't seem nearly as bad as just watching an average, you know, early June baseball game.
Yeah, it was definitely, even with the downtime, it was like, oh, what's going to happen? That was really cool.
You know what's going to happen right now? Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode 101 for Thursday, the 10th of November, 2016. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, that's Kent. We have not Patrick with us today, Patrick Bejean. And Kent, you would not understand how much I dreaded over what to call the episode number. Was it 101, 101, 101? What was it going to be? It confused me. This is the first episode fully out of beta. Wow. Like, I stress over the stupidest things.
That's what I was going to say. It's notable because there wasn't the word beta in front of the number.
Yeah, and beta is enough like Beja. And Patrick, you're with us tonight. Man, it's so awesome to have you on the show. Like, you're one of the podcasters that I've admired without actually hearing your podcast, but just your contributions to other podcasts. And it's just been amazing. And finally, I don't even know what it was, but a couple months ago, I finally turned on to the Phillies Club, and I was like, oh my God, this is the podcast I've been waiting for so long. This is so amazing. We're so happy to have you on.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I thought you were going to say, like, you know, I've admired you for so long only through your contributions to other shows, and I was going to go like, well, you're in for a disappointment when you actually listen to the actual things I do. But you know it, and you still like it, so thank you. I'm very reassured.
So the Phillies Club, Pixels, Le Rendezvous Tech, and what else do you got going on? I know you got other things going on the French Spin. I'm giving all this stuff early. Like, why am I pimping your stuff early? But whatever.
There's a bunch of stuff. You know what? We can talk about it at the end of the show if people are interested after they've heard me ramble on for a little while. We'll keep that for the end.
Hey Kent, man, how was your week this week, dude?
Emotionally draining. For once.
As for all Americans, I think.
Yeah, that's really about all I can say. So last Friday, my family and I
know you're talking about the Cubs game, right? That's what right?
That was very emotionally draining, and luckily that ended up in a win for my team. The Cubs, a lifelong Cubs fan here. So that was amazing.
Unlike other recent contests, but anyway.
Right. But then my family and I went to see Doctor Strange on Friday.
Oh, okay. So
that was a super good time.
Now, did you see it in standard in 3D and IMAX 3D? Like, give me the scoop here, because I've heard this is one of the few movies that the deeper you go into it, the more you get out of it.
Right. Unfortunately, I don't have an IMAX screen near me, except for the one at we have a space museum up on the hill.
I'm guessing they didn't show it.
They only show documentaries. They don't show Hollywood movies.
All right. It's traditional IMAX.
Right. So unfortunately, I didn't have that experience, but I did watch it in 3D, and the visuals for that movie are simply astounding. And even if you're not a hardcore 3D guy or whatever, I definitely recommend seeing this.
You know, I've seen the movie as well. Last week, I think it came out in Europe a little bit earlier than in the US. And the good news is that I don't know if you're aware, there was an election this week in the US, and the super important part of it. I mean, there were different questions being asked to U.S. citizens, but in many states, it was asked of them whether or not to legalize medicinal and recreational marijuana. And Dr. Strange, I believe, is the perfect thing to watch when you are on those recreational drugs, because it is so trippy. I mean, it's unbelievably trippy already without any kind of substance to abuse. But with marijuana, I think you'll forget everything about everything else.
And that just goes to prove my point of why we should be legalizing it everywhere, because I'm all about it. You want to enhance a movie, little puff puff, move on into the theater, and bam, you know? Who needs 3D?
This one especially, I mean, you haven't seen it, Amos, right?
I have not.
Okay, Kent, I'm sure you're on me with this. It's more trippy than like any other movie I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's on par with
Fear and Loathing.
Blank now. What is the Leonardo DiCaprio movie that came out?
Inception. Inception.
It's on par with that, like, trippy visual, like, oh my God, what is happening? How did they do this kind of thing?
Now, how does it stack up against Fear and Loathing?
Ooh, see, that's an entirely different brand of trippiness.
Okay.
Yes, that movie was trippy, but this is just takes it to a different level of this visual craziness that's happening in front of you, and especially in 3D. It's like, oh my God, because you can almost, you feel like you can just touch these things that are happening on the screen. And it's pretty good.
I think the difference between Inception is, and this, and, you know, maybe Fear and Loathing is more similar to an extent, but it's really just the visuals that are like a giant, awakening kaleidoscope of weirdness. And the very strange thing is that in this movie, it kind of makes sense without making sense. It's weird. It fits perfectly in the movie. But if you took out all of the visually weird scenes from the movie, it would be, you know, no one would think that this could ever work in anything. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. I highly recommend it, Amos. You need to see it.
I might just grab up the kids and take them tomorrow or Saturday just because. Now, Patrick, you have had an interesting week yourself.
Yes, that's all the introduction that is needed for me to start ranting for. So, yeah, I've been, you know, I was traveling to the U.S. for BlizzCon, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But after I landed, first of all, the trip, I'm currently in Helsinki in Finland. And the trip from Finland is basically 4 hours of plane to London and then 11 hours of plane time to the U.S. with some downtime in London. So overall, it was like 20 hours. It was grueling. And then I landed. The next day, I broke one of my wisdom teeth, and I figured, hey, it's going to be okay. I'm just here for 2 days. It's going to be fine, right? So I sort of went to Twitter to whine, and at the same time to sort of make sure to get some kind of reassurance from Twitter that it would be okay. And people were thankfully aware that it was not going to be okay and made it well known to me. So basically they were like, dude, don't joke with this. This is, you're going to be in so much pain in 5 hours if you don't get it fixed. So I was staying with our friend Tom Merritt, and his dentist was on vacation. So we went to Yelp and looked for a good dentist on Yelp. Of all places, we found one. We went there, and she, you know, I thought she was gonna clean the tooth, put a little bit of filling, hold me over until I'm back in a country where I do have excellent, you know, free healthcare. And she looked at it and she was like, "Ooh," it's like, "What? Ooh? What? Ooh?" I don't want to hear that. And so she was telling me she could either do a root canal, which was going to be like $1,300, or she had to take it out, which was going to be $800. Needless to say, I had not planned on spending that much money. And so I was asking her, isn't there an option where I leave here and pretend like it didn't happen. And she was telling me that I could, but that I would probably be in an emergency room in like 12 hours. So took it out, went to BlizzCon with a missing wisdom tooth. And I'm sure that if any one of you has ever gotten one taken out. So she made me a prescription for some regular, you know, ibuprofen and of course antibiotics, but ibuprofen and then some codeine in case I was in a lot of pain. The pharmacy did not have the codeine. And I figured, you know, this is a not safe for work show, right?
I can
swear.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. So I figured, fuck this. I'm just going to go to BlizzCon, just get the ibuprofen. It's going to be enough. And forgot the codeine. It was okay, but it was an interesting experience having a dentist visit in the U.S. And especially, you know, it's not like she wasn't good. She was a very kind Egyptian lady who had worked in the U.K. and the U.S. and had been in the U.S. for a long time. And my mom grew up in Egypt, so we had like something in common that got me $100 rebate on the thing, which was nice. But she was like, it wasn't like the pristine dental clinic that you imagine or that even, you know, usually you see in Finland or in France. It was like this office that was turned into a dentist's office. And she was like dropping bloody gas on the floor a couple of times. And the secretary was also her assistant. And like, she did a good job. I went to the dental clinic here to make sure. And they were like, yeah, it's okay. It's not like she did a bad job, but it didn't inspire huge confidence. It wasn't like this butcher shop that I would have run away from, but it was weird. So
it sounds like the kind of place that Mel Gibson would run into to get some bullets taken out in the middle of a movie or something like that.
Yes, basically. not quite that far, but yeah, if Mel Gibson in the middle of an action movie had to get a tooth taken out, maybe that would be the place.
Hey, welcome to Obamacare. So
That's what I was saying for the whole thing. I was like, thanks, Obama. I have free healthcare in my country. Why did he have to make it my tooth like fall out in the middle of my 3 days trip in the US? I'm sure it was his fault.
Oh man, of course. Everything
I mean,
is, right?
I mean, why not, right? Oh man. So my week was nowhere near that tragic. I was essentially just on a beta hangover, I'll be honest. There was so much build up to last week's show, and it was like it was 10 weeks worth of build up to the show. The show went off perfectly. Couldn't have had better guests on until this week, and it was just great. And then after that, like after we got done recording, I had the next day off, and I didn't bother editing anything. Like I had no desire to even get on the computer, and it took me a day and a half to get it published. And then after that, like doing the show notes this week, it was rough getting in there and creating the show notes. And then Kent was feeling the same way with everything going on. And then every time I went to work this week, it was another like emotional wrapped up day. I was playing, you know, a middle party for this, or I was discussing this or giving feedback on this. And it was like this constant. I have not had a chance to fully rejuvenate until tonight. And my wife and I went to like this little miniature marriage seminar that we like to go to, you know, just to make sure we're on the same page and stuff and get a, you know, we spend a little time specifically on a marriage just to make sure that the marriage stays strong. And that really, like, I mean, like time with your wife should, right? It really sent a lot of, I feel great. I'm ready to go. I'm tired because it's later than typical, but man, I'm jazzed. Like I'm ready to rock and roll this weekend and just get things done. It was great.
Nice. That's, you know, and that's something that I think is important when you have a relationship, you really should work on it. Like, you know, we go to the gym to work out our bodies. You know, you know, some people go to church to work out their spiritual life or whatever, but not a lot of people do that workout, like relationship workout.
Right.
And that's what this sounds like. And that's, I think that's a very healthy thing to do.
This was a love and money little miniature seminar, which money was one of the key factors on both of our first marriages not succeeding. So it's definitely a touchy subject. Now, Patrick, in Europe, do you guys have like little miniature seminars and little things to help? I mean, here in America, the divorce rate is just outstanding. So I don't even know what it is on the other side of the pond, but
I'm sure it's about the same. You know, it's not. I don't think it would be significantly different. It happens a lot, of course. I don't know that we have seminars, but we certainly have. You know, there is still a stigma on shrinks, I think, everywhere. But usually people would go talk to someone one-on-one. I don't think it would be seminars. The idea that you go to a seminar for anything like sales or apparently marriage or, you know, things like that seems a little bit American to me. I don't know if it's because I've seen it only in American movies, but it seems so. But it's certainly not, we're not immune to the idea of working on some things, including your marriage. That's what comes to my mind. But there are still people as well who would think, shrinks are for crazy people. I'm not crazy. But
speaking of shrinks, have you seen the movie Shrink?
No.
Oh, that is an amazing movie. Kevin Spacey is a psychologist that basically goes off the deep end. Like, his problems mixed with his patient's problems kind of just collide into this colossal shit show. And at one point, he's out back smoking a joint with one of his patients. And it's Kevin Spacey at his best. You know, it's pure drama and a little bit of comedy, and man, it's so good. Anyway, so I completely derailed that one, but you said Shrink and it just popped in my mind. I was like, that's got to be shared. So definitely recommend that one if you like Kevin Spacey.
Sure.
So my geeky thing of the week this week, I know Kent, you already talked about Doctor Strange and that's kind of tapped you out right there, but throughout this week, I played tech support so many times. Like, even tonight at the little marriage thing, I helped them set up their sound because they couldn't get the sound working. And it was one of those things.
Sorry to get back on this, but is it okay if I ask what happens in those seminars?
Oh, sort of course.
Ended the conversation there, and I'm curious because I've never heard about this. Like, what do you actually do there?
So in this particular one, there were my wife and I and maybe 8-9 other couples. And we actually met on the upstairs level of a bar, not far from where we live. And the chaplain on base was holding it, and as they're usually involved with most marriage things that the Air Force provides. And this was multi-service. Anybody related to the military, even if you were a civilian, just working on base, whatever, you could go. And what they did was they gave a questionnaire to you and your spouse and asked you to fill out certain things. Then you kind of compared your answer on how you view your finances and where you think you should be going with your finances and kind of how close are you on your ideals. And for the hour and a half, it essentially was a conversation starter and a way to – if you're not seeing eye to eye on your finances and you don't think that you're kind of jiving with it, to either confirm that you are jiving or that you're not, and give you a conversation starter on how to straighten things out and kind of reach a common goal and mediate in between. My wife and I, what we got out of it, we didn't realize just how close our desires and ideas for our finances were. We thought we were way apart. And come to find out that the only thing that we disagreed on was credit card usage, and it was mostly a definition. You know, she put on, I want no balances, and I was like, I don't want no balances, but I don't want to really use them. And come to find out that it was basically, we were saying the same thing, we just had different, we defined the circles differently when we marked them off. So essentially, it's a conversation starter, something to keep the conversation going, because a lot of people like to shut down when it comes to finances. You know, it's one of those big things that really interrupts marriages a lot. And it was a way just to get that conversation going.
So is that something you go to when there's already trouble, or do you just go there so there isn't trouble in the future?
My wife and I went. Well, anytime there's these seminars that we can find and they're open and free, we'll go because we enjoy exploring like I said, we're on our second marriage each. You know, this is ours, not to each other, but, you know, we were both previously married. And anytime we can go to these things, just to make sure we're, you know, it's like a tune-up on a car. You know, there's might not be anything wrong with it, but you just want to go and check the oil and make sure that it's running the right direction. And that's kind of how we use these things. We use them every chance that we get. And there are couples that have deep problems, but sometimes they don't even know it until they go to one of these things and realize, hey, we're not together anywhere on this financial thing or on the spiritual thing or on how to raise a family. And there's different little subjects for each one, but that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, I think most couples that go to these things have identified the problem and realized that, all right, we need to do something. Neither one of us want the marriage to end, so let's take some steps. And that's usually where these things come.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Yeah, either way, it was pretty interesting. So, now, the other geeky thing, going back to, unless you had another question about it, Patrick, like, by all means.
No, I mean, I could talk about it for a long time, I'm sure, but let's move on.
Kent, you watched the CNN The 60s series a long time ago. I saw several episodes and had to go back and start finishing The 60s so I could move on to The 70s, which is, of course, when I was born. So I'm very interested in what happened in that decade. And the one that I watched was the episode on civil rights and the civil rights movement. Now, Patrick, I don't know if you have access to this on Netflix or whatever, but have you seen these documentaries on from CNN on the 60s?
Which ones are they?
CNN has made these document, like hour and a half documentaries on each decade, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And they go through and they talk about one specific subject per episode. And there's usually like 8 or 10 episodes for each decade.
Okay. No, I haven't seen them, but it sounds super interesting.
These are incredibly well done documentaries. I mean, you can say what you want about CNN as a news organization, but they put together some absolutely incredible footage and a narration for these things. They're spectacular. I cannot say enough good things about these documentaries.
It makes me wish that, you know, especially with Patrick on, it makes me wish that we in the U.S. had access. Maybe we do. Maybe I just don't know because I'm a stupid American. But we had access to documentaries like this about other places in the world. Like, we're all about ourselves here in America, you know? Like, I'm multicultural curious, you know? I like to learn about everybody, not just us. But even
hey, just listen to the Phileas Club. You'll have everything you need.
Oh, I so do. I so do.
And I'll just pepper it, you know, random shameless plugs in the show.
By all means.
But yeah, that was another thing. And then Perseverance, the beer I had last weekend, is having a or last week on the podcast is having a 30th birthday party tomorrow night at that same bar we went to tonight. So I'm going back because I want to get my mug, my poster, and more beer.
That's awesome. I love when breweries put on events like that because there's just something about the craft beer culture that I really enjoy. And whenever they put on an event, brings people together and they're celebrating the beer. And it's just, I don't know. Those things are always a good time to be. Yeah.
Patrick, do you drink beer?
I actually don't drink that much. Yeah. It's not for any kind of, you know, religious reason or anything. It's just I don't enjoy drinking all that much, which is, I think, making me miss a lot of joy in life. But yeah, I never really got into it. So when I hear people talk about, you know, the wonderful beers and wines that they enjoy, it makes me a little bit jealous.
Mm. Yeah, it's not for everybody. And I've gone through periods of my life where I have abstained from drinking. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's not necessary. But when it is something that you enjoy, it can be really a wonderful experience, as long as you're not overindulging or doing, you know, getting into trouble when you drink. And that's, you know, that fortunately for you, that's one thing that you don't have to worry about. It's like, you know, the drinking and driving or getting into arguments or what have you because of them.
Yeah. It's true. I do a lot of coke and heroin, so that's another issue.
You got to balance these things out, though. You know, you can't just be right? all opiate all the time. You gotta mix in some alcohol in there and kind of level it out.
So that's what I'm thinking. You know, I'm trying to lead a more balanced life, and that's part of it. I think
it's all about balance, Patrick.
Hey, something we find very balancing around here are these. Patrick, you had mentioned one, and I don't even have it on my notes right now, but you had mentioned a TED Talk that you found really, really good, and me and Kent hadn't even heard of it. So can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, sure. So this is Hans Rosling, who is a statistician, an economist, and he's done a couple of TED Talks. The one I'm talking about is a little bit old now. It's from 2006, but it is enlightening. It's amazing. Basically, what he does is try to paint a picture of the state of the world through statistics that are animated. And so basically, it's very entertaining, as most TED Talks are. But he's sort of showing how much our perception of the world differs from actual reality, factual reality. And I'm saying it's enlightening because it shows you how much of your assumptions are wrong. And I think especially, you know, it was from 10 years ago, but I think it's still the case today. We have, because of a lot of factors, including the way media works, where it's a lot more profitable to show something that is dramatic and negative than it is to show something positive. We have a sort of skewed vision of reality. And I think it's important to, we were talking about balance a little bit earlier in a different context. But in especially in our perception of the world, I think it's important to understand the bad things that are happening and that we certainly have an abundance of, but also the good things and the good ways the world is evolving. So there are a lot of things that he's showing that, you know, are about poverty, literacy rate, you know, these kinds of things in places that we don't really know, like, you know, just the entire world, but Southeastern Asia, Africa, all of those places. And it's sort of an excellent way of not necessarily learning everything you need to know about these topics. Obviously, it's way too short for that, but to at least get people to take a step back and think, oh, okay, maybe things aren't exactly the way I thought they were. And that's always incredibly important. So really enjoyed it.
Kent, does that sound more or less interesting than Eric Liu? Because I think that sounds pretty awesome.
No, that's incredibly interesting to me because people today tend to be cynical and really focus on the negative. Part of that, I suppose, is media's fault, but there's something going on in our like collective psyche, I guess, in society, where we tend to dwell on the negative things. And, you know, it's really important to realize that, you know, not everything is bad. And in fact, a lot of people say that, like, oh, the world today is just so terrible. Well, honestly, the world right now is the best that it's ever been. If you look at the numbers and the statistics, and, you know, we're not as hungry, like as a human race, we're not as hungry. We're not as, susceptible to violence. It seems like we're just in all kinds of wars all over the place. But looking at world history, like, this is a pretty safe world right now compared to any other time in history. And it's just, sometimes we just got to stop and look at, you know, what's really going on and not be so cynical and negative, you know. And it's good to see things like this.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to match what you said there, because I'm the cynical asshole of this group. Right. So that's all me.
Well, I really think if you watch this TED Talk, you'll be a little bit less cynical. It's exactly what this is good for. It sort of paints a picture of the world, again, as it is. And it's kind of difficult. He's so entertaining as well and good-spirited. It's kind of difficult to remain. I'm sure you'll still be cynical to an extent, but it's difficult to remain completely cynical once you've seen this, because it's absolutely true. Everything is going the right way. And as difficult as it is to notice when we're stuck in everyday crap, on the world level, everything is going the right way. So sorry, I interrupted you and your cynicism. So get back to it.
By all means, that's mostly what I need, because I'm, like I said, I am the cynic here. Now, Kent, I alluded to it earlier, but Eric Liu, there's no such thing as not voting. I will hold my comments because I'm very interested to hear yours.
Yeah, so this was an interesting talk. It's relevant to what's been going on in the United States. It's about voting, as the title suggests. This guy has a little bit of a different view, a non-cynical view on voting. A lot of people get really discouraged and think, you know, why bother voting? What's the point? But this guy, he talks about how in the history of the United States, he's mostly talking about the United States in the voting context, and how in the vast majority of our 200, what are we at now? 200.
I'm not trying to public math right now.
Yeah, math is hard. But in most of our history as a country,
240,
people have been enthusiastic about voting and just excited for it. People have fought and died for the right to vote, not only at the onset of our country, but also you know, abolition of slavery, women's suffrage. You know, people have literally died for the right to vote, and throughout our history, people have been very, very excited, jubilant, and
it was celebrated.
Yes. Celebratory. That pretty much sums it up. Celebratory about voting. But in the last couple of decades, we've really grown cynical as a nation about the entire democratic process. And I think part of that is feeling let down or left behind by the system. And we don't feel like it matters to vote, because no matter how I vote, it's still going to turn out some shitty way. So why bother? And this guy, he kind of takes the opposite view of that. We need to bring back some of that excitement, some of that energy into the very idea of not just voting, but the democratic process as a whole. And he was talking about some projects that his team has started around the country to get more people involved, creative people. They're talking about music and like different plays and things right. that they're doing to you know, different artistic projects or whatever to get people excited about voting. And I think that would probably be a good thing if we as a country gave more of a shit, I guess, about voting and about the process itself. I don't know. You watched the same talk, Amos. What did you take from this?
So do you know the problems, the problem with self-help books and management books? Because they both have the same problem.
Right. I think you touched on this before, where there's so many of them out there, and the vast majority of those books don't have anything for you, but it's that little nugget.
Right. But here's the point is they have that one little nugget, and they usually shoot that wad off like right first couple chapters. You don't have to read the rest. It's just more elaboration on that basic point.
Right.
This talk is the same thing. The important part was that they're doing projects to encourage people to vote and to celebrate voting. And that was covered in the first 4 minutes. The entire rest of it was just rehashing and junk. And I didn't get anything out of the last half of it at all. If this had been a 5 or 6 minute talk, it would have been one of my favorites. It's like 18 minutes, and the last 13 minutes of it, I didn't get anything out of it. It was just time killing, and like I'm trying to prep for a show, you know?
Right. No, you know, I kind of had a similar thought because I was probably 5 or 6 minutes into the talk, and I'm like, wow, this guy has really covered this topic well. And I clicked the screen so I could see how much was left, and I was only halfway through the talk. I was like, oh man, where's he going to go with this? It was basically just watched the same talk over again.
Yeah, he went nowhere. So,
but he was an engaging speaker, I thought, and he was enjoyable to listen to. But I did have kind of the same feeling, like okay. He was just kind of going over and over.
So there's that. Patrick, what initially brought you to TED Talks, if you don't mind me asking?
Can't remember, honestly. I think it's like everyone else. People started sharing them, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's the quintessential quality of the internet that you're going to discover sometimes the worst, but hopefully even more often the best of what human knowledge has to offer. And TED Talks are definitely one of the examples of when you come across it. I think unless you're, I don't know who you have to be to not think this is amazing. It's very difficult for anyone in the world to watch a good TED talk and think, "Nah, you know,
a waste of time."
Yeah, basically. There's, I don't know. Do you guys know the channel Crash Course on YouTube?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah,
Kent's not fully initiated into Nerdfighteria.
Okay, well, please go check it out. Basically, it's another example of that, what the best internet has to offer. The best internet has to offer quality of things. It's a couple of academic brothers who decided to do a series of courses, but in the style of YouTube. So it's very short. It's, they cover different topics. There's world history, there's economics, there's lots of things. And they've been growing a lot, so they have a lot of different topics now. But they take 10 or 20 or 30 episodes, which are 10 minutes in length, and each one of them is going to cover, obviously, a specific topic, but it goes into the style is that of YouTube, you know, very quick cuts, very funny, lots of jokes, lots of memes, but it very serious and academically sound at the same time. So each course is, as I was saying, 10 to 40 episodes. There's one on astronomy that was wonderful. And I think that was the same reaction I had when with TED. It's just, you guys are probably around the same age as I am. And so we knew a time where if you didn't know something, you didn't know it. And that was it, right? Either you were kind of rich and you had an encyclopedia in your home, you know, a large
or a
10 volume. Yeah. Or a library next to you. But if you were at dinner and you were talking about something and you didn't know, no one had a magical, you know, knowledge device to pull out and figure out how old George Clooney really is. Right. So I think TED was one of the first times, along with Wikipedia and these kinds of things, where I was amazed by the power that technology can have on everyday life. And so, yeah, a very long-winded answer to say because it's amazing.
Right. No, that was a good answer. I got one quick follow-up question for you about the TED Talk that we watched. How is voting viewed in your country? Are people excited about it, or is it like a civic duty that people aren't necessarily amped up to go do?
It depends on the election. But definitely for the presidential election, if we get 80% participation, then it's very low. Usually well above that for the presidential election. People are very engaged. And there are more and more people, I think, as it is the case around the world, saying, well, fuck you. You can tell me what to do. You know, it's like, I don't want to vote and whatever. But every time this happens, or most of the time this happens, the elections show, without getting into details, because I know you guys can't really talk about it too much, but in the US, it's basically what the title of that talk was. There's no such thing as not voting. Even if you don't vote, the margins in this election were so thin that not voting meant you did vote. I guess it can be, you know, you throw your hands in the air and you're like, either of those clowns are fine, or, you know, either of those clowns are not fine, and you're happy with the result either way, or unhappy with the result either way. But in France, people usually get out and vote. And personally, I think it's an important part of our democracy. And if I have to find a reason why people are less likely to vote today than they were before, I think the quality of the candidates probably has something to do with it. But also, I'm wondering if it doesn't have to do with the complacency that we're getting into with our democracies, because we're taking them for granted, right? After the last big war we had, you know, I'm talking about World War II. Mm-hmm. People were felt very fortunate to be able to influence their own destiny. And I think now, ironically, things are so good. You know, we all have especially in Europe, I think we all have a roof, we all have free healthcare, it's easy to get into a mood of, well, this isn't going to change it all that much. And it's true, but I think personally it doesn't mean it's not precious. And just for the privilege of being able to vote and to influence your destiny, we should still do it. But yeah, I understand some people disagree, but
no, those are good words. I appreciate hearing that. Actually,
I will tell you flat out that this I didn't vote. I haven't voted since the first time I voted G-Dub in, and I still haven't felt good about myself since. So I'm still living with regret on that one, so I just haven't voted. But you know what? There's some more pleasant things to talk about than the American election, and that would be last weekend. We mentioned it earlier, but Patrick, you went to BlizzCon, man. How was BlizzCon?
BlizzCon was, as always, incredibly tiring and incredibly awesome. It's a very special convention for those. I mean, I'm sure most of the people in the audience know about it, but it's a convention centered around the games from one specific developer, which is Blizzard Entertainment. And it's a very, you know, there are lots of different kinds of cons. There are conventions that are, it's always fan centered, but even things like video game conventions like Gamescom or E3 or Tokyo Game Show, things like that, are very wide ranging. And I'm sure Comic-Con is somewhat similar. Even PAX, I've been to, not PAX Prime, but I've been to PAX East. There are lots of different topics and games and things to rally around. At BlizzCon, it's 4 to 5 games, and everyone you're going to meet is going to be geeking out about that specific thing you love. Mm. So it's an incredible feeling. You know, it's whatever you are passionate about, you know, in the audience, whatever you really like, whatever is your thing, which is maybe not shared by your family or your coworkers, or imagine if there was a place, a magical place where everyone you that was around you enjoyed and loved that thing. That is BlizzCon. Mm. It's basically going to a game, a sports game, a sports event, or a concert where everyone is on the same wavelength. And it's rare for video games specifically. It's getting more and more common, but it's still not very common. So it's very special.
There's a lot of video game developers out there, more than we could name on this show. But there's something special about Blizzard. We're talking about like Warcraft, StarCraft, World of Warcraft.
Diablo. Don't forget Diablo. Don't you dare forget Diablo. Right
yeah.
Now.
all of these games, Overwatch now, Hearthstone.
Yeah.
All of these amazing games. What makes Blizzard so special that people are just absolutely passionate about everything that company makes? How are they different?
Now, in full disclosure, Patrick at once upon a time was tightly associated with Blizzard.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you start talking about the company itself, I did work for them for 5 years. Left them 2 years ago to start podcasting full time. So, yeah, absolutely, full disclosure. But I think, you know, it's everyone will have their own opinion. I think the way I look at it is that Blizzard is one of those few companies that has a very deep-seated love for the product they designed. I think in every company, there is always a tug of war or some balance that has to be found between the product people and the sales people. It's basically the constant battle between the people who are developing the thing you want to sell and the marketing. And I think in many companies, if not most companies, the marketing people have final say. And in very concrete terms, you know, it's things like setting the agenda for, you know, the schedule for releases. They're going to say, all right, we need a strong product at the end of Q2, and we need a release at the end of Q3, and we need to hit the holiday season for this or that. And I'm talking about games, I'm talking about hardware, I'm talking about everything you can think of.
Just in any product cycle.
Yeah. And just design, letting the marketing aspects of your company, which are very important. I don't want to dismiss them completely. They are very important, but letting the marketing aspects of your strategy and your company influence your product a little bit too much, maybe. And at Blizzard, it doesn't work like that. Again, from a very concrete point of view, and I can confirm that firsthand because I used to work there, the people who have the power within the company, the decision power, are the developers. Now, it of course, that means that they need to be aware and capable in terms of marketing and communication and all of this. They can't just ignore that and go off and be, you know, divas that will never ship anything, because that doesn't make for a successful company. And also it means that sometimes it's very difficult for the people responsible for those other areas like PR and marketing to adapt to the changes that maybe they hadn't planned for. But ultimately, it means that the primary the priority is in the product itself, and the quality. When you have really talented people that are given the opportunity to work like this and who do have, the clarity to understand when you need to actually ship, the result is a high quality product. I think we've seen this in other companies. There are some game developer companies like Rockstar and Valve, when they weren't so busy with their Steam store that they had time to develop games, and that do things like this as well. There are hardware companies like, you know, off the top of my head, I think Apple has done that more than once. And that is a good way of creating brand loyalty and loyalty among your customers. When you, there's one example with Diablo, Diablo 3 that came out in 2002, and that wasn't up to the standards of the company and the players. And the company didn't put their hands up in the air and think, okay, well, whatever, we missed the mark on that one. They went back in and fixed it. And I think that's how you develop that loyalty. That's how you show that you really care about what you're doing. You care about making money, of course, but what Blizzard has figured out is that the best way to make the most money possible is to make great games. And so they try really hard to do that.
Yeah, and that seems like it would be a common sense, no-brainer sort of
thing. I know, right?
It seems to be rare in this industry. This is, in today's day and age, game companies seem to release beta products, and on day one, you have to download a patch just to play the game.
Okay. Well, so that specifically, if the game is very competent once you have the patch, I think it's fine. The thing is, you know, you used to have there is a point at which you need to actually press the CDs and put them out in the stores. And the thing is, today you keep development going after that point has passed, so you do have a patch ready to go when the actual release date comes around, and you know, it's been, you stopped development quote unquote 3 weeks before because you had to manufacture the things. So now you can, what happened before was that the games were so much less complex that it was possible to fix everything and just decide, okay, I'm going to ship. But if there were bugs, then the bugs were there and that was it. You couldn't fix them. Now you can. So I think if the patch on release day fixes everything, it's okay. The problem arises when you have a patch on launch day and still you have big problems. And that's a little bit too common. I would agree.
As far as day one patches, and I think this is one of those common complaints that a lot of people really gripe about, like, oh, it's got to, in my opinion, and this is just me, when you are selling a standalone product that is not internet connected, then the day, you know, or that can be not connected. Let's just say that, like, once you install Diablo on your PlayStation, you don't have to be connected to play. Like, it'll let you play. It's not the best experience, but you can technically play. But when a game is required, like World of Warcraft, things like that, you have to be online. And technically, I mean, World of Warcraft, you can preload Steam games. You can preload the files, stuff like that. When there's a day one patch, I don't mind that so much. It's on the standalone able products that you can play without being connected to the internet, and now it needs a patch, so now I've got to go out of my way to connect something I may not normally connect. That's when it pisses me off. And I think Blizzard, maybe it's because most of their products are digital releases and stuff like that, I think Blizzard's actually been really good about that, and maybe that's something they learned early from EverQuest, because I remember EverQuest, the day one patch would be bigger than the initial install for you know, for the expansion. Like, holy crap! When when Lucillin came out in EverQuest, that day one patch was insane, especially on a 56K connection. It was ridiculous. Oh. Like, you installed it, and then you sat there and you waited another day and a half in Japan on dial up to download the damn patch, and it was ridiculous. And I think companies like Blizzard really understand that, and. You know, maybe they just don't release the final files that they're not quite sure are release ready until right before release. But either way, I don't have a problem with it on digital releases, and I think Blizzard's been really good about it.
Yeah, I mean, every Blizzard game is connected now, and you preload everything. So yeah, there aren't day one patches, but there are, you know, day one minus 3 days patches. So I don't know. I understand it's not the same thing, but I think I understand where you're coming from. But also, at the same time today, it's the internet is kind of a given. And for someone who has a limited connection, or I could go on a rant about the infrastructure in the U.S. and the data caps, which are, I think, outrageous. But in today's world, it's kind of my feeling is it's kind of okay to assume that people have a decent internet connection in general. And the reality is they're assuming that now. So you do have multiple gigs patches on most games on launch day. And if you're on an ADSL connection, that's, you know, hopefully it's fast enough that it's going to be a couple of hours of download. But you at least have that, right? No one doesn't have at least that nowadays.
It's not
pretty, yeah, pretty much.
Not,
I would
not
say,
if you're in tech circles, or not if you can have, if you have the capability and the means. Maybe in rural, like Oxford, Indiana, probably doesn't have cable. You know.
Yeah. Well.
Cable. Yeah. Okay. Maybe not cable, but ADSL, decent ADSL.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a pretty decent ADSL.
And we're talking about day one patches. I just want to say Civilization VI had a day two patch, if that matters at all. Or maybe it was day three. The game is 4.8 gigabytes for the install. The day three patch, or whatever it was 1.2 gigabytes. So that's kind of ridiculous. Although I did notice, because I didn't play for like 2 days, and then it just automatically downloaded because of Steam. But still, you know, that's 25% of the install. That's EverQuest level, you know.
Right. Yeah. But it's so fast these days that most patches, you know, you'll get them sometimes without even realizing that you're downloading a patch.
So we forgot a very important thing, Kent.
Yeah, what would that be?
We forgot geekandgamergear.com.
Oh, I didn't forget.
Oh, I blew right past it. Like,
I've been shopping there, dude, because I can't forget geekandgamergear.com, because that's where I get all of my really geeky toys and like my hats and stuff. I got to get them somewhere because I don't have a nerd store in my town anymore. So geekandgamergear.com is where I go.
And I have a nerd store, but I can't find the stuff that I'm looking for, man. Like, that's the way it is.
Especially at the low prices that you can get things at geekandgamergear.com. But you know what's really awesome? If you go to geekandgamergear.com and find some really cool stuff, throw it in your shopping cart. If you use Ritual Misery at checkout, you get an additional 10% off your entire order.
Now, my local store can't match that.
Definitely not. Try walking into a Hastings or I don't even know the name of your geek store, but
I don't either, because it doesn't have a cool name like geekandgamergear.com. Like that's what you need when you're selling geek and gamer gear.
Try walking in there and asking for a discount code, Ritual Misery, and just see the looks you get.
I should totally try that. I'm going to try that next time I'm over there. I'm going to say, hey, I got a discount code, Ritual Misery. I'm going to use that at checkout, and you're going to give me 10% off. Is that cool? And I'm going to see what they say.
Yes, do that. Report back on that next week.
So if I actually want success on that, where am I going to go?
Geekandgamergear.com. That's geek, the letter N, gamergear.com. And use Ritual Misery at checkout for an additional 10% off.
That's amazing. So tomorrow, well, today for Patrick, and hell, today for us now. Today is Veterans Day here in the U.S. It's a day, of course, me and Kent find it very important, because it's a day off, usually. And because it celebrates us, like, that's just weird. You know, it's kind of weird. We don't think of it that way, but I mean, the civilian populace typically will.
And you know what's weird to me? When I put this in the notes, I was actually thinking, when I was writing this, I was like, this is an opportunity for me to tell Amos, who is still active duty military, you know, thank you for your service. It didn't even occur to me that at that moment, it didn't occur to me that I was part of this.
Right.
It's it's weird because like in our community, we don't think really about ourselves.
Right.
You know, that this day is for us. I always think about, you know, you or people that are actively serving right now. And it's weird because I'm not a self-congratulatory type of person at all. But I do think that service of any type, but in this case, we're talking about military service. I think it's important, and it's important for people to recognize the sacrifices that are made by service members. And that's not for, like I said, it's not a self-congratulatory thing, but I think it's important for people to recognize members of their own community or their own family. I don't know. That's why I put it in there. I think it's important for not just to have a day off or an excuse to have a cookout. Those things are great. Don't get me wrong. But also, you know, take a moment, you know, thank your grandpa, or your uncle, or your cousin, or whoever.
Patrick, do you have something like that there in France or in Finland where you celebrate previous members of the military and their efforts?
So we have remembrance days for end of wars. Today is the end of the First World War, for example, the armistice. Mm-hmm. And that is what we celebrate today. I think there is, and I can't really speak for Finland because I don't know it well enough, but for France, there is a kind of a defiance towards patriotism, which is a little bit unsettling to me. It's I think it stems from World War II, where basically we had a form of nationalism that took over Europe and that took over parts of France as well. And, you know, once, you know, with the Vichy government, which was basically France was split in two, and there was a lot of nationalism, which makes us very wary of people who try to glorify the country a little bit too much. And certainly when I look at the U.S., it does make me instinctively a little bit uneasy when people start chanting USA, USA for every, you know, every other any reason. It's funny when it's jokey, but it feels a little bit extreme when it's like, because inherently when you start chanting USA, USA, we're the best country in the world, what you're also saying, which I understand is not part of the conscious feeling, is the other guys suck, right? We're better than you guys. And
right.
It's sort of the dark side of patriotism. But I think in France, we only see that dark side, and it leads to a little bit of, we never see the positive side of it, which is the elation, the togetherness, the celebration of who we are, which is, I think, a little bit of a problem. I think there's a balance to be found. And certainly in France, I think we're a little bit too far to the self-deprecation. And when you see a flag, for example, put out somewhere, it's suspect immediately. You think, ooh, why is that person waving a flag? Mm-hmm. If it's a sports event, then yes, it's very accepted. But when you have someone showing a flag on their window, for example, you're thinking, is that person a, you know, far right movement person? That's immediately where your mind goes to. And it shouldn't be. I deeply believe that patriotism should be, you know, it can be a positive thing. And I think in most cases in the U.S. it is, and in many other countries it is. So we have that stigma of, I think it's because of the stigma of the world wars, and it would be nice to be able to get out of it to an extent.
Yeah, so. And that's something that I used to live in Europe. I lived in Germany for 5 years. I moved there in 2008. It was part of my military service. Moved there in 2008, and it was in the middle of, I don't think it was the World Cup. I think it was maybe it was the European Championship or something.
2008, I think, might have been World Cup.
Was it World Cup? Okay, well,
so not sure.
So Germany was, I don't remember if they won that year, but they were definitely in contention. And when we arrived in the country, there were German flags absolutely everywhere. And to me, as an American, that just seems natural. You hang your country's flag, right?
Yeah.
But everyone was just like, I can't believe all these flags. Like, they're just flags everywhere. This is unheard of here. What? So they had to explain to me, like, kind of what you were talking about, but maybe didn't go into as much detail. But they were just saying that, you know, flags, you know, here in Europe, you don't display flags, really. This is kind of an odd thing to have this, like, this national pride. And I was like, wow, that's complete opposite of the United States.
Yeah.
It's come back a little bit with, of all things, terrorism. As sad as it is, obviously, when we've been when we've had attacks, especially in France, you see people putting out flags again. And at that point, there's this again, this feeling of togetherness and of pride, you know, of saying we are our nation and we're proud of it. But very often I get comments. I enjoy my national pride, and sometimes I get comments of people saying, like, well, I don't think of myself as French, I think of myself as a citizen of the world. And I'm like, okay. It's like, right, no, I'm also a citizen of the world and I love everyone, but it's okay to be French or to be. But yeah, again, there are reasons for it, and there are, you know, people are wary of these kinds of things. So I wish, basically, just to finish off, I wish that we could take back the symbols of national pride from those far right movements, because right now they're the only ones displaying them and showing them. And I think that's not right. I think it's unfair. I think we should use them to show that it's not theirs. They shouldn't be able to overtake them and make them into something that's a little bit dirty and not respectable. So that's my view on it.
And if people would like to hear more of your views on worldly things, video games, and other such happenings, where can they go to find out?
I would suggest you go to frenchspin.com. I have a couple of shows there. One is about video games. It's called Pixels. And the idea is that we cover the industry news, the important things, every couple of weeks in an hour and a half. And so you don't have to go and check out every single gaming blog out there. The other one is called The Phileas Club. And it's a show where we get together people from different countries, different cultures, different origins. And we discuss news from, you know, the past month or so, and really with the idea of listening to what people have to say. And of course we have, you know, banter and good humor conversations, but also try to listen to people and not necessarily try to convince them of our own points of view. And because I think there's a lot of that in every type of media and every spectrum, you know, every part of the political spectrum. If you want to find someone that's going to try to convince you of something, then, you know, you'll be well served. But there isn't so much, so many places to listen to what people have to say. And that's, you know, to an extent what we try to do there. So if you think that you might enjoy it, go to frenchspin.com and you'll find that there.
Now, what if
available all over iTunes and everywhere else?
Now, what if they've taken about 4 or 5 years of French and they'd like to brush up on that, and maybe they just want to try to experience the French language from a native speaker?
Well, go to frenchspin.fr. You'll find shows on gaming and tech there in the same spirit as the one I was talking about for gaming in English. That's so frenchspin.com, frenchspin.fr. It's very easy.
See, and that's what I like about you. You just keep it right there. It's like you can't mess it up. And of course, you are not Patrick on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Can you summarize in like real quickly why you're not Patrick?
Patrick was taken.
Again, simple.
Yeah, no, and honestly, the thing is, people often wonder why I'm not Patrick. And the thing, so the real reason is Patrick was taken, but also it's from a marketing standpoint, it's perfect from a brand building standpoint. You will never forget that I'm not Patrick, right? It's forever ingrained in your brain now. So that also plays into it.
Well played. Kent, what do you got for us, man?
Well, see, I was really late to the Twitter game, so I've got underscores and extra letters and crap in my name. So I am at @RM_DelNoche on Twitter. Follow me there for, you know, whatever weird things that I'm putting up there. It seems like the mood of my Twitter changes week to week. So go there, find out what I'm doing. If you're a beer guy like me, you can go to ratebeer.com, look up username DelNoche, and you can read my over 500 beer reviews.
I was not late to the Twitter game, but just late enough to miss the Anthony mark, and the Amos mark, and the Anthony Lemos mark. And man, I missed all the marks, even though I was fairly early to the game. So I used my pseudonym from high school when I was writing poetry all the time. I'm at Ethan Kane on Twitter, and that's the only social media that I use because that's the only one I care about. And you can, of course, you can find the show at Ritual Misery. You can cruise on over to ritualmisery.com/swag. I got to tell you, this is probably the last week to get our still in beta shirts. We are no longer in beta. Those are limited quantity, limited time offers. They're going away as soon as I can figure out how to get Cafe Press to work. They are going away and very limited. And of course, if you are wearing one of our still in beta shirts or any of our first edition shirts or any of the other first edition swag, and we see you in the wild at a festival at South by Southwest, which we are confirmed for, or Nerdtacular, which we are confirmed for, any of those, we will buy you a drink. Period. Dot. End of story. Yep. It's at least two drinks because we never travel too far away from each other. So yeah,
and that'll pay for the shirt.
Yeah.
So buy the shirt, show up where we're at, you get the free drinks, basically equivalent to the price of the shirt. It's a free shirt.
It's a free shirt. It's you get two drinks and a free shirt. It's like everybody wins. And of course, we have to thank Kevin McLeod for allowing us to use this music right here. So awesome over in comtech.com I can always mess that up. Like I put the P in the wrong place. Hey, Kent, it is so good to be back in the post-election spin-up world where we can all just start hating rich white guys again.
I don't know about that.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming on our show. You have been a fantastic guest.
Thank you so much. I hope it was okay. I feel like, first of all, I wasn't feeling super energetic, but then I feel like I spoke way too much as I usually do. So I hope it was good.
It was great. You contributed greatly to the loose notes that Amos and I threw together last minute.
And you brought the overall intelligence level of this podcast to like an all time high. So,
you're too kind.
I do want to also mention that next week our guest will be Curtis LaRock from Chatroom.
Yes. And I'm not sure if he's bringing company or not. So,
maybe Curtis plus one.
Right. Well, so, but that will be a normal time schedule show, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it should be Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, we are currently streaming on YouTube because I forgot to change my settings from when I was doing the backup stream for the election night coverage. So it didn't even go out to Diamond Club, which
that
sucks on me.
That would explain some of the chat room.
Yeah.